proceed to the second case of the day, Fidelity and Deposit versus Rotech Industries. Mr. Kowalski.
Morning, Your Honors. Morning. Scott Kowalski for the appellants, Fidelity and Deposit Company of Maryland and American Home Assurance Company from New York. I'll refer to throughout the argument as the bonding companies. The bonding companies are appealing a final judgment from the Northern District of Illinois, Judge Hibbler, in which Judge Hibbler granted Rotech's motion for summary judgment and denied the bonding company's motion for summary judgment. The case arose in a diversity action filed by the bonding companies against Rotech, seeking relief under a contract that Rotech had entered with the assignor of the bonding companies. Bonding companies are seeking here today a decision from this court determining that the decision from Judge Hibbler improperly interpreted the contract between Rotech and the assignor, Guy F. Atkinson Company, improperly defined the obligations of Atkinson under that contract, and therefore improperly determined.
So what's your conception is that, so you have basically two contracts, and the first, all that Atkinson did was lend its name?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of
fact, sounds slightly fraudulent, actually, doesn't it?
What Atkinson?
You sell your name? Can Rotech go to Atkinson and say, you know, we're obscure, and you're famous, so if we could have your name, that would really impress the Chinese. So that's what we'd like you to do. Doesn't that sound like fraud? After all, the Chinese don't care about the name. The Chinese think that Atkinson is going to be involved in the project.
It's not fraud, Your Honor. It is essentially an endorsement of the procedures and
well, it doesn't look like
equipment.
An endorsement. I mean, if you look at, I'm looking at page 36 of the appendix, you have China, Rotech, and Guy Atkinson both on the top. They call it the Yangtze Three Gorges Project. They don't call it the bidding project. And at the bottom it says, please accept this proposal with the knowledge that the best work of these highly skilled and experienced companies, plural, and people, their commitment to the Yangtze Three Gorges Project will be no less than their past commitment to the international construction field. Well, that surely implies something more than Atkinson just giving its name. It says commitment to the project. The project is this huge, you know, immense dam.
The issue that was before Rotech and Atkinson when they made this agreement, this arrangement,
this MOU.
The question
was before Rotech and Atkinson. What is someone reading this contract directed at the Chinese trying to get, you know, business for Rotech? What are they going to think was the commitment that Atkinson made?
Well, it's clear from the bidding documents, the entire bidding documents, that Rotech is the bidding party. Rotech provided the letter of credit for the bid. What Atkinson did was say that between the three different
So what about your representations to the Chinese? Are they inaccurate?
No, the representation is that Rotech and Atkinson.
No, I just read you what the representation is. Their commitment will be no less than their past commitment to the Now, I take it Atkinson was, maybe not anymore when it's broke, was a real company that did things. It didn't just lend its name.
Correct. And Atkinson anticipated, and the parties anticipated, if the contract provided for it, Atkinson would come out and perform the project. That's the second divisible portion of the MOU and the supplements. If there was a portion of the contract that Atkinson was able to perform, they would come out under a performance agreement, a separate performance agreement from the MOU and the supplements. They would come out and perform on the site. As it turned out, as the facts moved forward from the MOU in January of 96 till July of 1997, the contract that was actually awarded to Rotech did not include work for Atkinson to perform.
Why was the word project used as to the first part of the procedure? If it was just a name lending agreement.
Well, the term project, as it's defined in the MOU and its placement in the MOU, indicated it was the bid documents, the invitation for bid sent worldwide by the Chinese owners of the Three Gorges Dam project, seeking proposals from all manner of construction companies and equipment suppliers. What Atkinson was doing in endorsing and in providing their name to this bid was saying the cableway system that you're contemplating in the bid documents and the typical crane placement system that you're contemplating for the placement of concrete at your dam is not the best way. It's not the most efficient. It's not the most cost-effective way. We think, because we've used Rotech in the past, that Rotech's system on this job will be the most effective, cost-effective, and the most schedule-effective way of doing that. And that's what Atkinson's
name on this. That's certainly not the way. Not the representations that were made to the Chinese. Now, maybe that doesn't have any significance.
Well, the significance, whatever significance it might have, Your Honor, I think that the document you're looking at, which is the cover to the entire bid package, which was a 2 to 3 inch document, indicates Atkinson is endorsing Rotech's equipment, and Atkinson is ready and willing to perform if there is work for them to perform on the project. The entire bid package provides that Rotech is the bidding party. The Chinese were not shocked and or surprised, as the trial court below indicated, when only Rotech showed up to deliver the goods, because Rotech is the only contracting party under the $30 million contract, which you see at Appendix 39. The Chinese were not defrauded in any way. They understood, and based on Atkinson's endorsement, the bonding companies assert, the Rotech did obtain a contract. In 1994 and 1995, Rotech had a prior contract with the Three Gorges Dam and provided equipment. And as the CEO of Rotech, Mr. Robert Oury, indicated, that project had not gone as well as planned and the relations were very difficult. So Rotech went out in 1995 seeking someone else to assist it in obtaining a contract for the Three Gorges Dam, for the Stage 2 portion of the Three Gorges Dam.
Doesn't Judge Posner's question suggest, though, that these two agreements are not divisible? Because, as he points out, the representations made with the bid suggested that there was going to be a follow-on arrangement. So that became, I think, part of the bid, didn't it?
The representations that were made, Your Honor, by Atkinson and Rotech were that this is the best equipment for you, and Atkinson will perform if there's work for them to perform. And I think that the divisibility question is clear in as the parties progress in their relationship from the original MOU in January of 96 to July of 1997. They specifically and separately apportioned a price to each of the aspects. The name fee, which turned out to be paragraph 1 of the MOU and the MOU supplement, and any performance under the contract, separately priced and separately identified in both the MOU and the supplements.
Well, what if after Rotech had given Atkinson its $1 million for the name, Rotech has said to Atkinson, well, now, you know, we really need your help, this project, and so on. And Atkinson said, sorry, we're not going to help you because we just wanted, you know, we're happy to have our $1 million for the name. That was cheap, didn't cost us anything. And so, goodbye. Wouldn't that be a breach?
Of that second divisible portion, if any.
Wouldn't Rotech complain? Now, wait a second. You weren't supposed to take the $1 million and run for your name because you also agreed to participate in the project, that is, in the construction. And you're not doing that. And now the Chinese come to us and they say, look, where's Atkinson? You know, we were expecting them to be involved in the project. And now we have to tell the Chinese, no, actually, They left after giving us their name.
Wouldn't Rotec
be very upset?
I would assume that Rotec would indeed be very upset, Your Honor. But
there would be a breach
of the second divisible portion.
No, it would be a breach of the whole thing. They're not supposed to take the million for their name, Atkinson, without being willing to engage, to have a further participation in the project, because that's what the Chinese expect, and therefore that's what Rotec expects.
The Chinese entered a contract in November 1st, 1996 with Rotec, providing for the Rotec personnel and the Rotec materials and equipment to come to the site, deliver the project, deliver the equipment, and oversee erection and commissioning of the equipment. They did not contract specifically with the expectation that Atkinson was anywhere in there. The parties specifically agreed, as the trial court correctly found below.
But you said Atkinson was in there.
Was in where, Your Honor?
These documents say that Atkinson is going to be involved in the project. It's going to be committed. It's going to have a commitment to the project. Their commitment, there is the two companies, including Atkinson, to the Yangtze Three Gorges project will be no less than their past commitment. That's a commitment to the project, not just the sale of a name.
But the agreement that we're looking at here, Your Honor, is between Rotec and Atkinson.
Well, this is part of the agreement, certainly, and a guide to the interpretation of it.
Certainly, and I think that this is not part of the agreement. This is an indication that of Atkinson's performance under that agreement. I think that Atkinson indicated that here is the equipment you ought to use for this project, and here, and we are committed to this project in any form or fashion. The project that was bid here resulted in a $30 million contract to Rotec. Rotec, because of its situation in 1994 and 1995, was desperate, wanted to go out and get someone to help it obtain a bid, and agreed in the MOU and the supplements to pay someone to help them get past that award stage. And if there was any work for Atkinson to perform, Atkinson would have performed it. The parties agreed there were no ongoing obligations at the time the second MOU supplement was signed. Atkinson did not have any further performance obligations until another performance agreement may have been signed. So at the time that the second MOU supplement was executed and in fact paid for by Rotec, there were no ongoing performance obligations for Atkinson under that second divisible portion. Now, if there had been a breach and if Atkinson had said, no, I will not come to the project, then Rotec may have been entitled to turn around and say, well, you've breached the second portion, but that couldn't go back to the name fee. You gave us the name, you provided the information in the bid, and therefore you've performed properly under this separately priced, separately identified portion of the contract.
Well, what if you what if a judge hired a law clerk for a year, and after a week, the law clerk said to the judge, well, you know, thank you very much. I think I've actually gotten a major benefit from this clerkship in this first week. So, I'd like my pay, and I'm quitting. Now, couldn't the judge regard that as a breach of a contract because he had an expectation that this person would be working for a full year?
Or for 2 years, and although I wouldn't recommend doing that to a judge, I think that
is that divisible too?
Is that contract divisible? Under Illinois law, if the consideration is apportioned separately to individual units, then it could be divisible. In this case, I think that the parties would agree that...
I would think it would clearly be a breach, and... Because the contract was for a year, it wasn't for a week. And so if this is a contract for more than just the name or the certification of the adequacy of the proposal, it's not that's your further point, then why wasn't there a breach?
Because the parties agreed that there would be one stage of the project, one stage of the contract, which is through award, and one stage of the project, or the contract rather, that is performance of any contract that's awarded. In the example you gave, the parties agreed not on a month-to-month janitorial cleaning services contract like we saw in Kimco, but on a here's a year. You're going to perform as my law clerk for a year, and I'm investing in you. It's not a janitorial services contract where someone comes in, cleans a building on a month, you pay them for a month. You're investing time and energy into that particular law clerk. And
why didn't you have just one contract? Why didn't Atkinson say, or Rotec say, you know, we want your name, we'll buy your name, and later, you know, maybe we'll have some further relationship?
Well, they hoped at the outset to have that further work, but they agreed that there would be a payment.
Well, you don't put hopes into a contract.
The parties
here... If you had a hope, why wouldn't you have separate contracts?
The parties here clearly indicated their hope. In the second supplement, July of 1997, paragraphs 2 and 3, both parties hoped that there's work for Atkinson to perform. 8 months into the contract, they couldn't find any. I'd like to reserve just a moment or two for rebuttal, Your Honor.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Mr. Gilman.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Gilman. I represent Rotec Industries, Inc. in this appeal. We urge this Court to affirm the trial court's award in favor of Rotec based on its finding that the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and its supplements were executory at the time that Atkinson filed for bankruptcy. Atkinson rejected those contracts, and therefore they were not part of the bankruptcy estate and were never transferred to plaintiffs, and therefore plaintiffs have no claim against Rotec. The trial court's construction of the memorandum...
Can't a contract be partially executory and partially executed?
I recognize the principle of divisibility of contracts, yes.
No, even if there's no divisibility, it could still be executed in part, right?
There would be portions of a contract that have been executed, correct?
Right. So, what is the significance of that in bankruptcy? You have a partially executed contract.
Because under the bankruptcy code, a party of a debtor needs to either assume or reject a contract that has not been fully performed.
So partially executed is treated as executory for bankruptcy
purposes.
Correct. Is that what you're
saying? That's my understanding. Only if there's a divisible portion that could be determined to have been fully executed, could that possibly be an exception from the bankruptcy code's rules regarding rejection and assumption of contracts.
Even if it were 99% performed?
I'm not aware of any case in our bankruptcy code that allows a that draws a line less than 100% complete on a contract. The trial court found that...
Well, what about your opponent's argument that really it's two stages? In the first stage, Atkinson certifies that it's a good proposal and endorses Rotec. And the second stage is left, you know, undefined, speculative. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, the initial memorandum of understanding provides that the parties would cooperate to put together a bid to submit to the owner, and then if Rotec was awarded the contract, the parties would enter into a performance agreement to perform the work. There was no benefit, economic benefit, to the parties just to put the proposal together. The only benefit the parties would obtain would be if the owner awarded the contract to Rotec and they performed the contract. And so therefore, I believe that the bid preparation efforts are really a non...
Atkinson wouldn't get its $1 million unless the proposal was accepted?
Correct. In fact, the first supplement to the Memorandum of Understanding states that it was subject to the award of the contract to Rotec. The trial court, though, never needed to address that issue in terms of the divisibility of the contract, because it found that the parties defined the term project clearly in the Memorandum of Understanding to represent to mean the furnishing of the equipment for the powerhouse and dam construction. And
how could it be divisible on that theory?
I'm saying
if there was something further to be done that's relatively undefined here, how could the contract be divisible?
I don't believe
unless
it was
you
divisible.
Accept your opponent's proposition that it was just for the use of the name, period.
Well, I don't believe it was divisible, and I don't believe it was...
It can't be divisible, is there...
Excuse me?
Your position is that it can't be divisible, is that right?
Correct. My position is that it cannot be divisible because the efforts to prepare a proposal have no economic consequence in themselves. The only benefit the parties would receive would be upon the award of the contract to Rotec, and then the performance of the contract by Rotec and the other parties pursuant to the performance agreement. In fact, the initial MOU states that initially states that the parties are going to work together to prepare a proposal. Then it states that in, I believe it's Section 4.
Where is that in the appendix?
Part 3 of the of the MOU at App 28 discusses the efforts of the parties to prepare a proposal, and it identifies the various tasks that each party would perform.
Mm-hmm.
Then it carries on to Section 4, which is on page 29, and it talks about anticipation of a contract being awarded and states the parties shall enter into a mutually acceptable performance agreement for the performance of the project. That's in the original memorandum of understanding. Then if you go to the first supplement, the recital paragraph, which is at App 37, states this supplement reflects the discussions held and agreements reached between Rotec and Atkinson related to Rotec's participation with respect to the project. Then there's number paragraph 1 that talks about the use of the name, and paragraph number 2 that talks about involvement in the project. With respect to paragraph 1, the parties state that the use of the name constitutes a material part of the performance agreement referenced in the MOU.
So it wasn't a million. It was $2 million for the name. Is that right?
Well, in the supplement, the first supplement, the parties talked about no less than $2 million.
That's paragraph
one. No greater
one.
Than $3 million. In the second supplement.
But I'm just looking. This is App 37. Is that the first?
Correct. That's the first supplement.
So in the first one, it's $2 million for the name, and then another million for involvement in the project, or what?
Correct. Well, it's not less than $2 million, no greater than $3 million. Then in the second supplement, the parties revise paragraph 1 and state that it'd be $1 million for the name use.
And this was and the second supplement. And but was this before the bid was accepted, or after?
The second supplement was after the bid was accepted. That there because they're referencing a present contract value of $30 million plus dollars in that first paragraph.
And what was the modification?
The modification was in terms of the dollars.
Dollars went,
as you noted in the first supplement,
from $2 million to 2 to 3. Is that it?
Correct. In the first supplement, they discussed a sum of not less than $2 million or greater than $3 million. In the second supplement, the parties fixed the amount at $1 million based on a contract value of $30
million. Well, now I'm lost. The second supplement is at A52?
And at 47.
What's A52?
It's at A52 as well, except that's as part of an attachment to a letter. Yeah, you're correct. That is the same document. Just it wasn't. I'm sorry. I apologize. A52 is the first supplement. The second supplement.
A52 is the first.
Yeah. App 47 is the second supplement.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that.
Under the trial court's construction of the contract, which is based on the definition that the parties gave to the term project, the name use that Atkinson was to provide on the project dealt with the furnishing of the equipment and not the its efforts to in collaboration in preparing the bid for the owner or anything it did prior to the award of the contract. The trial court construed the contract based on the language of the parties and determined that and determined that any efforts that were being compensated afterward were part of the performance of the agreement. The court looked at the first supplement where the parties stated that, as I said before, that subject to the award of the contract to Rotec, Atkinson would participate in the project by allowing Rotec's use of its name in the project and to provide technical advice and support with respect to the performance of the project. Both of those both of those items were part of the performance agreement, were a requirement in order for performance by Atkinson in order to get paid for the work they were to furnish. There's nothing in the memorandum of understanding or any of the supplements that address the issue of compensation for Atkinson's efforts in assisting in preparation of the proposal. And it's on that basis I believe the trial court was correct in determining that, in construing the contract, determining that the term project meant the furnishing of the equipment and that Atkinson did not fulfill its obligation with respect to the use of its name because it did not lend the use of its name to Rotec during the performance of the project, during Rotec's furnishing of the equipment to the Chinese Chinese owners. That's the basis of the trial court's ruling. Of course, this court can affirm on any basis supported by the record. And the other basis that I urged was that, as we just previously discussed, the contract was not divisible. The obligations of Atkinson to for the use of its name, assuming that the parties meant that Atkinson was to get paid for its prior efforts, that was not severable from the rest of the contract.
Well, isn't that because what you're seeking here is for their prior efforts, that is, they would get $1 million for name and 5% for orders, something like that.
It was $1 million for the $30 million contract that was awarded. Then there was some discussion about receiving a percentage for future contracts.
Well, you say some discussion. Isn't that what you're asking for? Isn't that what you're Atkinson's successor, right?
No, the plaintiffs are.
All right, I have it backwards.
Right.
So
we're Rotec, and we expected Atkinson to do two things: to lend its use of its name to Rotec during the performance of the project, during the furnishing of the equipment, as well as needed, or as the scope became developed, become more involved in the project in terms of furnishing technical support and advice.
So you're saying that you weren't actually obligated to pay Atkinson a commission for these additional orders? Or did the additional orders not come through, or what?
Additional orders came through the second supplement to the Memorandum of Understanding has a provision for payment of a percentage of future contracts that may be awarded. At that time, I believe Rotec was in discussion with the owner in terms of award of future contracts, but none had yet been not materialized. So the parties just set forth a formula for that for the compensation.
So it was contingent, and they never materialized. Yeah.
Well, ultimately, the contracts were awarded. After Atkinson filed for bankruptcy and did nothing further with respect to this project, Rotec did obtain additional contracts. And, in fact, part of plaintiff's claim in this case is to receive compensation for those additional contracts as well, not just the $1 million that with respect to the first contract. But they're asking.
Atkinson did receive something, didn't they? They paid something.
Atkinson did receive something. The parties in the second supplement talked about paying $1 million to Atkinson. A portion of that was paid. It was based upon when letters of credit were issued from the owner with respect to the contract. The amount allocated, there's nothing in the record to show that the amount allocated represented a fair compensation for the use of Atkinson's name. It was just a way to allocate the proceeds from the contract to the various parties.
Now, you just want to repudiate the contract as executory. Is that correct?
We believe the contract was executory at all times.
But you are also suggesting that it was a breach?
Well, there's a breach when Atkinson filed for bankruptcy.
But is that relevant? Is the breach relevant?
The breach is not relevant because the contract was executory
right.
and not so, assumed,
so
not performed.
Have, right.
Correct.
So that's the answer.
But correct. But there can't be a breach of an executed contract by the party that has fully performed. Going back to the purpose of the use of the name, Your Honor asked some questions regarding whether it was fraudulent or whatever. The use of the name dealt with the benefit that Atkinson had to furnish with respect to the project in terms of the Rotech's performance of the work, furnishing the equipment to the owner. When Rotech submitted its bid, it indicated Atkinson's support for the bid. And it's reasonable to expect for the owner to expect that Atkinson would be involved in the project one way or another. The way that the contract came down, the $30 million contract, there was a question of what Atkinson would actually do. But regardless of that, they were always on. They always had the responsibility to perform their portion.
The use of the name involved an endorsement, right? I mean, it's Atkinson was endorsing. Rotech's performance, capability, and so forth.
Well, Atkinson also was participating in the preparation of the proposal. It has specific tasks in preparing the proposal. I see my time has elapsed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilman. Mr. Kowalski?
Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted to address a couple of things raised by counsel for Rotech. The contract being executory, we obviously believe that the contract was performed in the first divisible portion. That is evidenced by the agreement in the second supplement to pay the $1 million and the subsequent payment by Rotech of the first installment under that agreement. Two of the problems, I think, that Rotech's interpretation of the term project present are it fails to recognize the structure of both the MOU and the two supplements, which divided specifically between bid proposal and through award of a contract, the competitive bidding phase, and any performance. That same structure follows through both supplements, the first and second supplement, and separate consideration is apportioned to both. The idea that the term project would encompass all of Rotech's work on the entire project creates a problem for that structure and does away with the structure that the parties carefully set forth in the MOU under Section 3.01 and 4.01.
What specifically would Atkinson do in post the bid project? What would they do? What would be
after
the activity?
Award of the contract?
Yeah. If called upon, what could they do other than name lending?
Atkinson has had a worldwide reputation in constructing dams, and the idea, as expressed by Atkinson, was to come on site, erect and commission the Rotech equipment, and help put forth the schedule of all the concrete.
Like consultants, placement. Engineering consultants.
They were actual constructors, but in this case, they were going to be schedule and concrete placement consultants. In this case, my time has run out, Your Honor.
But isn't it, looking at this second supplement on App 47, isn't it apparent, although not really terribly clear, but isn't it apparent that Atkinson is supposed to help Rotech get additional orders for which it'll receive a fee, right? Isn't that what Atkinson was supposed to do?
The assistance, the economic benefit that my colleague was referring to, was the fact that that Rotech, in the situation in 1995, was not in a position, it felt, to obtain a contract because of its difficult relationship with the Chinese. Having Atkinson endorse its product as it went forward with the Chinese conferred a benefit. Rotech ended up obtaining that contract, ended up obtaining additional contracts after that because Atkinson, one of the foremost dam builders in the world, said that this is the way to go. This is the product you need to place your concrete on time and on budget.
That implies that Atkinson had post bid acceptance duties under the contract. It was supposed to help Rotech get additional orders.
the assistance that Atkinson provided by endorsing the product in the first instance was the benefit that was conferred.
You look at this, if you look at this App 47, there's the fee for the use of its name, but there's also a fee for getting these additional orders over and above the contract, above the $30 million contract. So the $1 million is for the $30 million contract, but Atkinson is supposed to help Rotech get additional orders for which Rotech will get a 5% or some other fee. Isn't that true?
Respectfully, Your Honor, there's nowhere in that paragraph one of the second supplement that Atkinson has any ongoing obligation. Those additional orders are for additional equipment on the Stage 2 construction of the dam and powerhouse.
But hasn't Rotech agreed to pay a 5% fee if Atkinson does get additional orders?
Rotech agreed to pay the fee because Atkinson had already endorsed its product, gotten its foot in the door further with the Chinese owners. We're going to give you this much equipment for $30 million, and we'd like to also give you these two other pieces.
You're saying Atkinson had no obligation to do anything further?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's what the parties agreed
to. Why do you call it a divisible contract? Why don't you call it a contract that ended when the bid was accepted because Atkinson had no further duties?
That is one construction that you can put on it, is that the any performance obligations Atkinson may have had subsequent to the award of the contract were undefined at the time of the second supplement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.